The Lord. Well, I apologize for all the little idiosyncrasies we're having with technology today. As I was leaving earlier, I discovered we've really got to replace a speaker now. So, hallelujah. But that's okay, because you know what? We can preach without a speaker. I've got a big mouth. I know how to use it. I might not be able to talk by the end of the sermon, but I know how to use it. Amen? Praise God. Well, let's open our Bibles this morning to Proverbs chapter 6. Hallelujah. You know, today, you hear all kinds of bad reports. Well, there's no work out there. There's no jobs. You know, I've looked, and you know, I always just look through the papers and I read all the columns, or try to read all the columns. And you know what I see in there? There are jobs. The truth of the matter is, people just don't want to work. There's plenty of work out there if people will go out and do it. Today, kids in the high school, there's nothing for me to do. There's no work for me. Listen, if there was work 30 years ago, there's work today. It's the same stuff. You're not going to get a job in high school going out making 20 bucks an hour. As a matter of fact, you're not going to get that right out of college, probably. But you know what? That is exactly what they want today. I know guys, you know, and I've seen this, and as a home improvement contractor, I saw this. I saw people that were my age or younger going for mom and dad's dream, what they had. Never mind the fact it took mom and dad 30, 40, 50 years to get that. They just as soon go out and get in debt and then hope to God that they keep their job. And, so today we've gotten this really bad work ethic. And, you know, the Bible talks about laziness a lot, believe it or not. It's mentioned a lot through Proverbs. And if you've never read Proverbs, well, I have to say, it's one of my favorite books to read. It's just because I get so much out of what Proverbs has to say about everyday life. You know, people, well, there's nothing in the Bible about what I can do today. Well, yeah, there is. Get in your Bible. Look in it. See what it says. Proverbs 6, let's go there. Verse 6 says, "Go to the ant, you sluggard. Consider her ways and be wise, which having no captain, overseer, or ruler, provides her supplies in the summer and gathers her food in the harvest. How long will you slumber, O sluggard? When will you rise from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep. So shall your poverty come on you like a prowler and your need like an armed man." Today, we would just as soon relax and enjoy. I don't have a problem with relaxing and enjoying, because I'm going to tell you right now, there's two ditches. You can go into this ditch over here that's, oh, I'm just going to relax and, you know, enjoy all the time. Or you can go all the way over here to this ditch, and I'm just going to work, 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 work. If I'm not working, then I'm sleeping. And if I'm not sleeping, I'm working. You'll die an early age, I promise you. You will die early from that. Am I prophesying anything on you? No, I'm not. I'm just telling you what your body's going to do to you. What do you think God said, 6 days you shall work, the seventh you rest. Now even the Jews took it a little far, but they got legalistic about it. Well, I'm not going to lift a finger for this. I'm not going to lift a finger for that. We kind of did that in this country. You know, we'd shut everything down. Oh, no, you can't go, you can't do that. Listen, you know, I don't have a problem going to a restaurant on Sunday. Not everybody's a Christian. They want to work, bless God, they can work. I don't want to work. I worked one time. Well, I worked a couple times. Even on my own business, I worked on Sunday. I'd go to church and then go to work, and then I discovered something real quick. It didn't pay. Because not only that, I was too tired the rest of the week. Was short, grouchy. But anyhow, today, a lot of people just like to be lazy. You know, when we started having kids, that was one of the things we determined. We were not going to raise lazy children. We were seeing lazy children already, just as, you know, just as a young married couple. And we began to see things that were taking place, and people, oh, there's nothing wrong. You know, they do what I tell them. Well, the truth of the matter, they didn't do what you told them because you did not instill a good work ethic in them. If you still instill a good work ethic in your children, we won't have a generation that's coming up behind us that has the mindset of, gimme, 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 my name's Jimmy. That's what they want. They want something for nothing. They don't want to go out and work while the weather's right. They want to go out, oh, the sun is shining today. Do you know what that means for Joshua in the summertime? The sun's shining. He's baling hay with Grandpa. He's making money. He's working. You make hay while the sun's shining, not while it's raining. But the fish are biting. So? They bite. They don't bite necessarily just because the sun's shining. I discovered that a couple years ago. Pat gave me a farmer's almanac. He said, here, you go. Here's a farmer's almanac. See how accurate it is as far as the fish biting. Do you know it worked better by fishing according to that almanac than it did just going out when the sun was nice? The gravitational pull of the moon had something to do with it. They were hungry on the days that I went, according to that. And the days that I didn't, well, I just sat out there and drowned a couple worms in the... Now, I'll just tell you right now, bluegill, they'll eat anything. They'll eat all the time. So I don't consider bluegill biting to be the fish are biting. You know, okay, just so you know. They got to be big fish. Anyhow, so a lazy man is going to be broke. A lazy man's going to have poverty come on him. He's always going to have this problem. Now, I'm not talking he doesn't always work. I know lazy men who work all the time, but they're lazy in other areas. But this lazy area that he's talking about is work. There are people that will not work. They want to find the path of least resistance all the time in working. Sometimes you're going to have resistance. You're going to have to put a little more effort forth than what you think is right. But you got to do it. Now, let's go ahead and open over to Proverbs 19. A lot of the scriptures we'll be looking at are in Proverbs today. Proverbs 19, verse 15. Says, laziness casts one into a deep sleep, and an idle person will suffer hunger. Now let me explain a little difference here. Everybody thinks that just because you're not doing anything, you're lazy. I worked for a guy that if you weren't doing anything, he thought you were lazy. He accused me of being lazy. Now I'll be honest with you. Thank God he was still working on me, and he's still working on me, but that just about brought out a side of me that he didn't want to see. Because I did not consider myself lazy. I worked between 12 and 16 hours a day on the average working. I'd work at work and then come home and work and try to do things there. So I did not consider myself to be lazy. I would get 5 to 6 hours of sleep and that was that. I don't consider that to be a lazy person. But because you stop doing something for a minute, or maybe you take a 15-minute break, he considered you to be lazy. Or maybe you sat down on the job. Anybody ever had a job where it was actually easier to sit down? Well, I have, especially when I got a kneel. My knees are paying for the stupidity now. So when I didn't kneel and I just stoop, well, you know, you get up and your back hurts. You know, but if you were on the ground and like we had to sand some things with belt sanders on the floor. He wanted us to kneel like this and belt sand. I was like, forget that. I went and got knee pads. I got down on both knees and let that thing ride. He called us lazy. The other guy got up. I said, I ain't lazy and I don't care what he says. He's a liar. I'm going to do it the way I'm comfortable with doing. But you know, when I've thought about that, that was something that was instilled in him. That if you took the easier way of doing something, the smarter way, you were stupid and lazy. See, there's a lot of, anybody know that mentality? Anybody else grew up with that mentality? Just do it. It doesn't matter if there is an easier or better way to do it. Just get it done. Well, you know what? There's been many times I discovered that if I had just taken 5 or 10 minutes to go get the right tool and do the job right, I didn't end up getting hurt. I wouldn't have done damage to the thing I was trying to work on. You know, when I was in the Philippines and we were in a, it was kind of a, wasn't an official contest, but we had this rivalry going between me and my friend and two other mechanics. We both had jobs that had to be done that night or before we could go home. And we were to change out engines and Hummers. We each had a Hummer. We had the exact same problem. We both had to get them out. You know, we got this big old A-frame pulling out that big diesel motor, and you know, Sean and I, we got that, had it all out, and I just couldn't wait to get that motor. Just wait for him to crawl out from underneath the Hummer and come over and help me position that motor underneath that A-frame and hoist it. No. I had to prove to everybody that I wasn't lazy, that I wasn't slow, so I grabbed an 800-pound engine and pulled my back. Now you're like, well, you got healed up. Yeah, oh, I healed up, and I didn't hurt right then. But the problem is, I've dealt with that problem ever since then. My youth was my what should have been my glory became my stupidity to prove that I wasn't lazy. Now, by the way, we beat the pants off of them by 4 hours, but it cost me dearly. I look back, 5 minutes is all it took for him to finish up what he was doing and to crawl out and to help me. But I wanted to have it ready and have that engine going out so he didn't have to. To shave 5 minutes off cost me 20 years of pain. But you see, it got that because people thought, well, if you're not doing anything, you're lazy. Well, I'll tell you right now, I have since changed. I have, you know what? People stick at, what are you doing? I'm thinking. Well, you're not doing anything. Yes, I am. I'm thinking. I'm thinking of a better way to do this. The way I'm doing it is going to get me hurt. The way I'm doing this is only tearing things up. So there's got to be a better way to do it. Now, so idleness differs. Idleness actually means a cessation of action. So when you read the word idleness in here, it is not talking about you just stopped. Okay, you know, if your car is sitting outside idling, is it still not working? Yeah. The engine is running. All you have to do is put it in gear. It has just stopped the movement that it was doing. Well, if you stop doing something, people, oh, I'm idle. That's the devil's playground. Listen, let's get something straight. If you're idle all the time, yes, that you become the devil's playground. You will get into whatever the devil wants you to because your hands got to be doing something. God did not make you just to sit at home and play video games. God made you to be doing things with your hands, with your mind. He created you to do that. He didn't create you just to sit around, drink sweet tea, and eat chocolate cake all day. Although that sounds really good. That's not what He created you to do. He created you to be doing things. He gave each and every one of us a creative flair. You may not have a creative flair to build furniture. You may not have the creative flair to work on or build cars. But you've got a creative flair somewhere that you need to dig up. You know, most people that hate their jobs are in the wrong job. If you really, really hate your job, find one you like and you will never work again the rest of your life. I learned to tolerate jobs. Anybody know what I'm talking about? I'm here. I'm just tolerating, just putting in my time. I did that. I learned to do that. But then one day something happened. I found a job that I loved. It was home improvements. I thought, well, that's convenient. I like the show Home Improvement. I like tools. What a better combination. But I did not ever really feel like I was working. It was a challenge. And I'm going to tell you right now, ladies and gentlemen, you need a challenge in everything. If it's so easy that you're no longer challenged, turn it up a little bit. Create a challenge in your life. God gave man a challenge. People think, oh, well, it was just, he just said, go and subdue the earth. You know, all we think of is, well, all Adam had to do was just go out and make sure the animals were nice to each other. I don't think nobody really realizes Eden was just the Garden of Eden. Let me rephrase that, because everybody seems to think that Eden was just this little place. Eden was the entire landmass that God created, that he called up out of the water. And it said he planted a garden eastward in Eden. So way over here, you've got a garden. Way over here, you've got wild jungle that needs to be subdued and brought into submission. And mankind was supposed to do, talk about a challenge. Anybody else? I know there's a few of us. Anybody else been in the jungle? They need subdued, don't they? They are overgrown. There are vines. There are trees. You've got to bring some sort of order to it, or else there's really no life to it. Oh, but Pastor, they got all kinds of bugs and stuff. Yeah, that's not what God had in mind. God did not have in mind that plants just run amok. I know, how many have been down south and know what kudzu is? There's a few of you know, that was brought in down there because they thought, oh, well, it'll grow up and it'll help erosion problems. Kudzu is a major problem now. One little plant, they shudder when you mention the word kudzu. And if you don't know what it is, go down south. About the time you hit North Carolina, you'll start seeing it growing on the side of the roads. It's nothing but vines that cover the trees and everything, and you can't get through it. And so somebody brought that in. Well, you know what? God brought man in and said, you're supposed to subdue that. They have yet to find a way to bring kudzu into submission. But I think the devil got hold of that plant. But we are not to look at somebody and say, you know what? You know, Jerry, you don't seem to be doing anything, man. Well, do you know Jerry's work schedule? Well, Pastor, you know, I look around and I see you doing this and I see you doing that. I see you working in the workshop. And what do you do? I'm working then and then I keep working at night. I work about all the time now. Is it always physical? No. And I will tell you right now, I have learned one thing. The mental work sometimes is harder on you than the physical. When things are not going good here, I'd just as soon go over to Afghanistan, put on a uniform again, and go after Al-Qaeda. At least you can let some of that frustration out. Throw a grenade, blow something up. But you're working. Now, I will tell you this right off the bat, ladies and gentlemen. God created physical work. There was physical work created. Everybody said, oh, there wasn't. He created it. It relieves the stress in our bodies. You got to do something physical. You know, I look back, you know, man was in the Marine Corps and we ran and we ran and we ran. I couldn't gain weight. Just kept running and running and running and running. Always doing push-ups, always doing sit-ups, pull-ups. I'm like, for crying out loud, I can do them in my sleep. I can do so many now that I'm done and waiting on you guys because I'm in shape. As it turned out, I figured out why I couldn't have a six-pack. You know, the six-pack muscles, which there's actually eight of. Because I had overdeveloped my diaphragm. So instead of having those developed muscles, I had one big developed muscle that was overdeveloped from doing sit-ups. Well, it dawned on me one day. I was reading, actually, I think it was the Marine Corps manual that I've got. And it says that the physical exercise helps the body to relieve stress. Can I tell you something? If you're feeling a little stress, go for a walk. Fast. Cause your body to start burning some of that energy that's being pent up. You've got chemicals and things in your body that have got to be burned up, and if they aren't getting burned up, they're only going to start eating away at your body. Now, this word idol, I like the definition of it from the Webster's Dictionary. the old Webster's Dictionary. It means treacherous, false, and deceitful. This is the Strong's definition, out of the Strong's. That's what the word means. So it does not mean you got done doing something and you stopped. It's talking about a totally different type of idleness. It's talking about let's see how I can figure out how to make Jerry and Joanne do my job. Anybody know the type? I've worked with a few of them. As a matter of fact, my very first real order that I had to come down on was with a former roommate who I had considered to be a friend. He was given an order to go do something. Tonight, you're over here, but in the morning, you're to clean the head or the bathroom. Okay, that's great. Well, when it came morning time, I said, all right, you guys go get the head cleaned and we'll be good to go. Well, I went into the head to check it out. Well, here's another one of my former roommates in there. And I said, where's so-and-so? And he said, he sent me. He said he had things to do. I said, you go down and tell him Corporal so-and-so said to get his butt down here and do it. Now, you know, having said all that, this was the type of person he was. He would find a way to get you to do his job. And I fell for it hook, line, and sinker. He would act like he was so stressed that he couldn't do it, and I would iron his uniforms for a promotion board. I would iron his uniforms, and while I'm ironing his uniforms, I'm asking him questions so that he would be ready for this promotion board that he never passed. Because when it came down to it, he didn't know actually how to do it. If he couldn't find somebody to do it for him, he didn't know how to do it. He's one of the only mechanics I ever knew that for 4 years didn't touch a wrench. And somehow he retired out as a motor transport officer. Have no clue how. Well, yeah, I do. He found somebody else to do the work for him. Now, there are people that you think they get away with, but they ain't getting away with anything. Okay? Don't go worrying about that. Just because somebody else is doing that, don't let it affect who you are. You continue working the way you know God's at. Now, if there's an easier way and a better way to do it, by all means, do it. You know, I know today there are old carpenters that they can't understand why we would use nail guns. I can't understand why you would want to drive a nail with your hands that many times. I mean, you stop and think about it. You know, when we were building this in here, guys, we used nail guns. And we went through several boxes of nails, and there's like 5,000 nails per box. Usually takes you 3 hits to sink the nail properly. Now, there's guys, they try to do it in one. You can't do that all the time. Yeah, and if you're not real used to it, it's going to take you 10 times. And each finger might show that it took you 10 times. But you see, there are better things and better ways to do it. So don't be afraid to use them. Computers. I know today there are people, computers are the devil. They tell people this. I have heard it. Computers are the devil. Listen, the computer's only evil if you use it for evil. You know, I've got a real nice East Wing hammer. It's meant for good. But if I use it for evil, is it any more evil? No. If I chuck it across the room at somebody, I just used it for evil. But if I'm using it for what its purpose is, then it's not evil. Money. Money in and of itself is not evil. It's what you do with the money. The craving for the money. Now, go to Ecclesiastes 10. I had to look there in my notes. Ecclesiastes 10, verse 18. It says, because of laziness, the building decays, and through idleness of hands, the house leaks. Now they're talking, he's obviously talking about a real house. How many of you know if you ignore your house, it's going to fall apart around you? That's just all there is to that. If you don't deal with a leak in the roof, it doesn't go away. There's no magical potion that you can stand down there and speak onto it and the leak stops. The only thing that's going to fix it is a little blackjack. Maybe new shingles, maybe a new piece of metal. Whatever it takes, you got to do it. That's exactly what he's talking about here. But he's also talking about something else. He's talking about people who won't deal with important things in life thinking they'll go away. How many of you figured out they don't just go away? If you got high blood pressure, it does not just go away. Now, I do not believe in getting on all the medication because sometimes the medication's worse than the problem. But there is things you can do to reduce your blood pressure. Exercise, watching what you eat, watching the salt you put on your stuff. Things that will aggravate it, watching the stress you allow in your life. If you ignore the problems do not go away. They just keep building up and get worse, just like a house that rots. Inside this village, there are several houses you can walk around. As a matter of fact, it looks like you're getting ready to tear one down over on my street that for the last 3 years, well, last year, Joshua and I went out about 9 o'clock at night with our clippers, and we cut the bushes back because the bushes were overgrown over the sidewalk. We cut them back. Another man in the town, village, he's been over mowing the grass because the homeowner has ignored the problems, and I don't know what the deal is, but I think the village ought to get the house. Sell it to somebody who will sell the property anyhow, because the house is now worthless because windows have been busted out, doors have been open, leaks, things, the stench from the house, you can smell it from the road. They've ignored the house. The house is now lost. The only thing you can do is tear it down and build a new one in its place. But when you ignore a problem, it doesn't go away. See, a lot of people like to, if a problem comes at them, you know what the first thing we do? I don't want to talk about it. Well, sometimes, you know, you do need to step back. I will agree. Sometimes you got to take a step back from the situation and look at it. Get your bearings and go back at it. But you can't just say, okay, you know what? That ticking in my engine, I'm going to ignore it. That knocking, well, hey, it's getting a little louder, a little heavier. And then the next morning when you go out to fire up your car and the oil is so heavy and thick it's still in the bottom, you fire it up and there's no oil and you throw a rod through the side, you can't say, oh, the devil did this. I get sick of religious people that do that. They give the devil credit for more things than he's ever done. The devil didn't cause your engine to blow up. You did, you lazy bum. You wouldn't put oil in it. Oh, I got a flat tire. Well, I'd go flat too if I was bald. Bald tires go flat. But people don't want to deal with the problem. Deal with the problems in your life. And if you need help, this is a good example. I'm glad this is actually worded this way in here. If, let's say your problem is a leaky roof, how many roofers do we have in the building? One. And he's not raising his hand. I no longer consider myself a roofer. I have replaced roofs, done roofing. But if you don't know how to do it, do you go do it? No. Get somebody who knows what they're doing. If you got a computer problem, if you don't know how to do it, get somebody that knows what they're doing. If whatever the problem is, you get somebody who knows what they're doing. You don't just, oh, well, we'll just ignore the problem. Well, the computer problems only get worse. Leaks in your roof only get worse. And a leak in a roof, I worked for a contractor one time who, they ignored a problem. I was subbing out from him, and they ignored this problem. The storm was coming, and they had the roof tore off of this house. I mean, they had it tore off. Not just shingles off. There was no sheeting in places. So they just covered it over with tarps. And and if you do not batten that down with boards, it's coming off of there. And I use long screws. I don't use nails because nails will work out. Well, guess what? This storm, this was a two-story house. Storm blew in, blew the tarps right off. The rain just poured right through the attic, through the first floor, and got down to the second, or to the bottom floor. It ruined a lot of stuff. So now this guy's involved in a lawsuit because somebody failed and ignored a problem. Now, there are some people who work harder at not working than they do if they would actually work. The newspaper and the news is full of it today. I mean, just here in the county, I think it was over in Iberia, two years ago, we had two boys, young men in their 20s, too lazy to go out and get a real job, breaking monuments in the cemetery down, and then hauling them to the salvage yard. They worked harder at busting that aluminum piece up than they would have if they had just went and got a job. Now they're in jail. There are two brothers down in Columbus. Too lazy to go get a job, so they just decided to go around and steal air conditioning units off of churches. You want to know why ours is 10 feet in the air? That's why ours is 10 feet in the air. I determined, listen, somebody's going to steal it, they're going to really work for it. We will find them the next day. They will be underneath the air conditioning unit on the ground. But people will work harder at not working. I know people to this day, they work harder at trying to find ways to make money to try to get around and mess over the system. When the truth of the matter is, the only person they're messing over is themselves. And so they try to work hard at getting, you know, this and that and this other little underhanded scheme. Man, what'd you make out of that, $20? How many hours do you have? See, people do not take their own time into consideration. Do the math. It's going to take you 50 hours to complete this job, when it might take a professional 10. Somebody who knows what they're doing. And if, like, electric. If you don't know electric, don't touch it. It's not worth it. But what might take you, like, oh, it's a simple job. Well, you know what? It might be a simple job. But if you do it wrong, you could burn your house down, for starters. And that's a serious consideration. But it might wind up taking you 10 hours to do that, and it only would have taken somebody else an hour to have accomplished that. But there are people, they will work harder at trying not to work, or work harder at trying to save a buck. Well, that way, he was going to charge me $100. Let's see. If your time, an electrician maybe may get 20, we'll figure $20 an hour. And if you've never been shocked, you'll understand why they make $20 an hour. I've been shocked. Somebody told me the circuit was dead, and it seemed like it was dead until my cutters went through it. And I went off the ladder. But anyhow, let's figure your time at only $10 an hour. You spent $100. And you probably got shocked, probably lost your patience, lost your temper, yelled at the kids, yelled at your husband, yelled at your wife, whoever, whatever. When if you'd have just bit the bullet and did the job and let somebody else have the headache. But you see, we work harder sometimes than if we'd have just done it the right way. God made it so we all need each other. And that's where we get into troubles, when we start saying, well, I'm an island, I don't need help. And I will tell you right now, I'm the biggest one that's guilty of that. You can ask my wife. I look and try to figure out how, do you know how I got into home improvement? I started figuring out how to do it. But fortunately for me, there was a desire because I like to do that. Now, originally in my family, it was because, well, we didn't have money. Well, things weren't always done right either. I've come to the conclusion. You know, one thing I've never done is a windshield on a car. Well, you know, Rob does that for a living. To be honest with you, it scared me. I hear people think, well, I'll put a piece of piano wire through there and cut the... I'm like, you know what? I think I'll just let somebody else do that now. Somebody knows what they're doing. I don't know how to make steel. I think I'll leave that to the guys that know how to make it. Besides that, as hot as I hear it is, they can keep it. And it's worth every dime they get for it. God made us that way, so we need each other. Turn over to 2 Thessalonians. Got to hit something here that lazy people don't like to hear. Second Thessalonians chapter 3. Go to verse 10. For even when we were with you, we commanded you this: if anyone will not work, neither shall he eat. For we hear that there are some who walk among you in disorderly manner, not working at all, but are busybodies. Now, I'm going to try to hit a couple different things here. I understand today that, you know, unemployment's high. I've seen it higher. In my lifetime, it has been higher. And I understand helping people. But what did the apostle say there? He said, if you won't work, you don't deserve to eat. Let me tell you something. There's a twofold thing there. First off, you need to work. Second off, you need to do it for yourself. See, when people start getting handouts all the time, they start losing their self-respect. They start losing their self-worth. And they're like, hey, you know, this is easy. It amazes me how many people I see who just stand in line for handouts. There's actually a whole generation now that knows the ropes for the handouts. They know what welfare will give them. They know what this church group will give them. I know, they call us. We have requirements. And not only that, we support some of these other ministries who are already taking care of this, and they have requirements. So we've created, there's a whole generation that has no respect for themselves. They don't know how to work. They don't know the feeling. Man, has anybody in here besides me know the feeling? I know you do. Of when you've done something and it turns out good, you feel great about yourself, don't you? Man, you feel like you can take on the world. Man, you're ready to do anything. But there's a whole generation that doesn't know that feeling. Because they've been given handouts. Mommy and daddy wouldn't make them make their bed. Mommy and daddy wouldn't make them take out the trash, mow the yard, vacuum the living room. Do you know how many guys I ran into in the Marine Corps that did not know how to run a vacuum cleaner? I was like, man, that was one of the first power tools I ever used. It was. Back then they were. Man, that old Eureka. And I didn't get away with just going around into high traffic areas. Mom made me take the coffee table, and we had a big round one. It was about, this big around. I had to flip that thing up, roll it, vacuum underneath that thing. There's no dirt underneath there, but I had to do it. I had to pick up the rugs, take them outside and shake them. But you know, if you ask a kid to do that today, oh, you're killing them. And there are parents that will tell you you're overworking them. You know when I've overworked a kid? When they've passed out on the floor. They know how to work. By the way, I've never had any of them pass out. So. Not yet. But I'm working towards it. Joshua's sitting back here, oh man. They can. They can really take it. Because it'll create a good work ethic in them. And if they have that work ethic, there's nothing going to stop them. But kids who do not have a work ethic today, they're the ones that we're seeing living on unemployment. They're living on welfare. It sickens me the number of young people today that are on welfare. And I'm not talking about because they need to be. It's because, first off, they don't know how to shut their legs. Or they don't know how to keep it in their pants. So now they've got a bunch of kids and they can't support them. Yeah, they won't. So we've got a real problem here, and it all boils back down to the fact that we've created an entire lazy generation that's working harder at not working than if we just give them jobs. But see, here's the problem. They got the entitlement mentality. I want what you got. You, buddy, you know it took me 20 years to get to this position in this company. Well, I want your job. Well, that's great. Eventually, it'll become available. But right now, you're making $8 an hour. Now, I understand in today's society, that's actually kind of a low, I mean, what, minimum wage is what, 7-something? It wasn't too long ago, I was only making $5 an hour. I did that and did work on the side. When I had that job for $5 an hour, I had 3 jobs. And by the way, this guy tried to tell me I was lazy. Had 3 jobs, plus I'd work on the side. They had trucks that needed to be picked up in some other state. I'd get in a truck at night, tell Angela, I said, I'll see you later this evening sometime. And then show up back the next at work, bright and early at 8 o'clock the next day. But today, you'll get the kids to party. Oh yeah, they'll party until you're going to work the next morning. But they will not work that long. Oh, God forbid you actually ask them to work. Do something. Bible says that if a man's not willing to work, he doesn't eat. Now, in times of high unemployment, and if the church is particularly, if the church is helping people, I have a requirement. You work. Well, Pastor, there's no jobs. Oh, no, I didn't say there were jobs out there. We got stuff around here that may need to be done. There may be somebody across town who needs some work done. You got to work. You're still getting fed, right? Go do something for somebody else. When I was laid off, been a few years ago, I got laid off. And actually, 95. But when I got laid off, you know, at first, I thought, this is going to be kind of cool, until I realized I'm only getting a third of what I used to make. And I still have the 3/3 bills. Now, we got behind on some bills. We got behind on our rent. And, you know, most landlords don't like that. So I went to them and I said, there's no prospects right now for work. And, I said, do you need something done? I'll work for you. Now, what aggravated me is he tried to hire me tried to pay me for what you'd pay a 10-year-old kid. Like, listen, I'm doing electric and carpentry work. Don't just pay me what, you know, you'd have to pay somebody else to do that. Which he eventually did, but he wasn't happy about it. But I worked off my bill. And what I didn't work off, I paid off by working overtime. But you see, it cuts into the kids' social life today. Your social life is not the important factor in life. You know, my social life isn't going to pay the bills. My social life isn't going to feed my family. Is social life important? You better believe it is. It's just not the most important thing. Today, like I said, a lot of people, all they think about is partying. Going out and having fun. Hey, I like to have fun too. I believe in having fun. And we were talking about a show the other day, how they portray a Christian. There's a Christian, supposedly portray a Christian on the show. And, you know, this person's judgmental, critical, everything else. Oh, by the way, a slut, whore, however you want to put it. She's sleeping around with people in the office. And maybe that's the name of the show. But that's how they portray a Christian. Oh, by the way, doesn't believe in fun. That's everything a Christian's not supposed to be. And that's how they're portraying a Christian. I like to have fun. I love to tell jokes. And if I get a chance and you're a guy, you might get a wedgie. I'm just forewarning you. If your underwear is sticking up there, guys, I've got a couple friends, they lost their waistbands. I'm sorry. Poor guy. He had to wear those loose underwear the rest of the night. I couldn't resist. They were sticking up. We were in a line for a foot washing at church. I'm sitting there like, oh, man. Ooh. Oh, unfortunately it is. I tried. I did not submit myself to God. Yeah, his waistband went up over his head, but his underwear didn't. He does still talk to me. The only thing we could do was just finish him off. I mean, there wasn't but about this much holding him on. But I believe in having fun. Okay? I don't believe pastors ought to be giving wedgies. That don't, you know. That... Well, you should go find you a church where a pastor doesn't have fun. You'll find the most miserable person on the face of the earth. I like jokes. I like comedies. I like funny stuff. Now, let's look at diligence. Diligence is a steady application in business of any kind, the constant effort to accomplish what is undertaken. Turn now to Proverbs chapter 10. Diligence in itself of the word carries the connotation that we can be working at something and stop for a little bit. It says constant. It doesn't say that you're all the time hammering something. If you're constantly applying pressure to something, it doesn't mean that you're working always as hard as you possibly can. Because sometimes, you know, you'll go nuts. If you're hitting the grindstone all the time, you're going to lose it. That's why we have these things called vacations. That's why we have the word recreation. You know that means recreation? To recreate ourselves. Well, I believe you got to work 7 days a week. Well, I don't. As a matter of fact, God said you had 6 days you could do your work. He didn't say you had to work all six. If I can get my work done in 5 days, I'm going to do it. Now, I worked 6 days a week for several years. And I'll tell you right now, it was the most miserable 3 years of my life. I hated the job. Hated being tired all the time. I'd get up every morning and tell Angela, oh, I'm going to bed earlier tonight. 11 o'clock, I'd go to bed. Thinking, why? Proverbs chapter 10, let's go to verse 4. He who has a slack hand becomes poor, but the hand of the diligent makes rich. He who gathers in summer is a wise son. He who sleeps in harvest is a son who causes shame. The diligent hand is one that makes you rich. The one that's constantly. Like I said, that word constant does not necessarily mean that you're sitting on something all the time, but that you're keeping a pressure on something. I can keep pressure on things. I can keep pressure on my sons without having to stand there and lord over them. Just the fact that I know the dad's coming back in 10 minutes, and if this isn't done, I'm getting the boot. That's being constant. I can be constant with my children. I can be constant in a lot of things. without actually having to sit there and lord over them. I can get things done. I figured it out now. I can get things done without me actually having to do it. And I'm not talking about being lazy and suckering somebody else into doing my work. It's called delegation of authority. But you see, that's not the way I was raised. I was raised, you just do it. You do it, that way you know it's done the way you want it done. Well, you know what? A lot of people in my family haven't lived to be much older than 60. I plan on being the first. Well, no, I'm believing. My dad's the oldest male in his family right now, out of 14 kids. And it was half and half. He's 60. He's going to keep pushing it. Why? Because I'm going to kick his butt if he don't. Nah. Because I keep telling him, you're going to have to break the curse. Sometimes you got to learn to delegate that authority. Now, so he who has a slack hand becomes poor. He who's just, I'm just not cut out for that. I'm not going to, well, then you're always going to be in the same rut. And you know what a rut is, right? It's just a grave with both ends kicked out. You never get out of it. Sometimes you're going to have to be diligent about something. Okay, I'm going to do this and we're going to change things. Versus, well, I'm just going to keep doing what my grandpappy did and what my pappy did. Well, did it work out well for your grandpappy and your pappy? Probably not. And I'll tell you right now, just because your grandpappy or your pappy was rich and he made money does not mean you got that gene. Because I promise you, it was something they had to work at. They had to be diligent at. We were watching, actually it was called America's Castles the other day, and Hearst, William Randolph Hearst. Man, that's a big house. Jeez, how many square feet? It was just one of at least six houses. And we're 40,000 square feet, something like it. It was huge. And, it took them better part of 30 years to build it. You know, but he built, his dad gave him a business because Harvard kicked him out for having fun. Or was it Yale? I think it was Harvard. They didn't think you could have fun and be a serious business person. So they kicked him out of college and he becomes a tycoon. But anyhow, constantly being diligent about that. But you know what? The man did know how to have some fun. Even though he had a messed up marriage, had some other issues that were messed up. But he was constant. He was diligent about that. His dad was just a poor man and was heading to California to be a miner. He was going to strike it rich. He did in copper. As a matter of fact, they said the copper mine that made him the richest produced 1/5 of the world's copper. Yeah, that's a lot of copper. But being diligent is what put him there. Proverbs 13:4. The soul of the lazy man desires and has nothing. Oh, I wish I had this. Oh, I wish I had a new TV. I wish I had a new car. I wish I had one of them fancy new microwaves. I wish I had one of them turkey deep fryers. Whatever. They wish and wish and wish and they have nothing because they won't do anything about it. And if they do anything about it, usually it's the wrong decision. They take the money they should have paid their electric bill with and went and bought the turkey deep fryer. Right. That's a lazy man's attitude. You never take away from what you already owe and buy something that is not a necessity in life. Now, if you are down to the point where you have to make the decision between groceries and electric bill, I ask God to lead you in that. I know what decision I would make. But you need to ask God what decision he wants you to make. Because maybe he's got something else waiting for you. Now, but the soul of the diligent shall be made rich. The soul, that's just part right here. Your mind, spirit. Man, it's what you are. It's everything you experience. That's why the rich man said, soul, you are happy. You have made much money. You can retire now. He told his soul that. His living, his being. And God said, you fool. See, he was diligent up to a point, and then he became stupid. He became foolish. Because what made him diligent was also to bless other people. See, that's where we start messing things up. I believe Bill Gates is a pretty diligent man. I mean, I don't agree with all of his philosophies in life, but as far as his work ethic, he makes millionaires. The Waltons, the people that own Walmart now, I do not consider them to be diligent people. Their dad, probably. But them, no. They focus on themselves. People that understand when you prosper other people, that's where your prosperity comes in. When you are making people rich, when you are helping people get out of the hole they're in, that's where your wealth comes in at. Bill Gates has probably made more millionaires than anybody has. Shoot, most of the people that work for him, a lot of the people that work for him are millionaires. And he started in his garage. Can I tell you something? Don't be afraid to step out and do what God has called you to do. Listen, if a man that can deny the existence of God can do it, what can you do with God? Don't you think you could be the next Microsoft? Don't you think you could be the next whatever? Whatever it is God's called you? He's not going to set out and say, okay, see, I've paved the road for you. He ain't doing that. He wants you to step out in blind faith and trust him. I knew God wanted me to start my business. I knew it beyond a shadow of a doubt. And I knew when I was supposed to have quit. And I didn't for 3 more months. Why? Because I couldn't see the road, Lord. Finally, I got, okay, I've got to do this. I said, I can see the road. I've got several jobs lined up. They're big enough to you know, keep us above water. As soon as I stepped out on them, they disappeared. God said, now I want you to trust me. It wasn't but a few months later? A few months later, I got hooked up with a commercial construction company working all over the state, and they said, we can keep you busy. As a matter of fact, if you can get enough guys together, you can hire a framing crew and you can build these things for us. I'm like, me? Man, I'm still wet behind the ears. I didn't because of that lack of confidence in myself. But God took care of me. It took required faith. Did we get a little bit behind? Yeah. But you know what? We caught up. Just as fast as we got behind, we caught up. God did it. It required a walk of faith, trust me. And as it turned out, it was always a walk of faith. Don't ever sit back and say, well, I'm comfortable now, and you ain't doing anything. You got to be a little uncomfortable and constantly walking in faith. This congregation is a walk of faith. Every last one of you are actually walking in faith. You may think you're not. How many of you are guaranteed your job? None of us. I'm not even guaranteed a job. I'll still have work to do, but I'm not guaranteed that it's going to pay. But neither am I afraid of work. Proverbs 12:24. Just above it. It says, the hand of the diligent will rule, but the lazy man will be put to forced labor. Do you ever try to work out, why is it there's certain people, they always seem to rise to the top? Because they're diligent about something. And if you're one of those that feels like you're always put into forced labor, ask yourself and be honest with yourself, where am I being lazy at? What am I not being diligent about? Do I need to get a better, do I need to sharpen up on my education? There are jobs you've got to have that, those little initials behind your name in order to have them. If you're an LPN and you're wanting to become an RN, you got to do some more schooling. You're not going to just get it. They aren't just going to give it to you. You've got to go ahead and finish out the schooling, then take the test and become an RN. You want to become an MD, and that doesn't mean mentally deficient. You're going to have to spend at least 8 years in school. You want to become an attorney? You're going to have to. I don't care if you know what you're doing. You've got to have the initials behind your name to prove it. You may have to do that. Otherwise, we're going to have corrupt judges ruling. We're going to have corrupt attorneys. We're going to have horse doctors. We're going to have all these people until the people of God finally stand up and say, you know what? If they can do it without God, how much better can I be with God? Do you know the corruption we've got in the attorneys? By the way, if you're not worried about the attorneys, keep this in mind. They become judges. If they're corrupt, now what do you think they're going to do when they have ultimate power? It was never supposed to be that way in this country, but unfortunately, nobody has paid attention to the Constitution. Because we've not been diligent. Now, Proverbs 21:5. Proverbs 21:5 says, the plans of the diligent lead surely to plenty, but those of everyone who is hasty, surely to poverty. Listen, people don't get where they are just by accident. You can claim somebody's has been born under a lucky star, been born with a silver spoon in their mouth, but I'll tell you, there were plans. There are plenty of people who were born into wealthy families who still ended up poor and broke. Why? Because they did not follow the plans. The person who made the money was diligent in making the money. But the people who decided, well, I'm just going to spend it. William Hearst, yeah, his dad was wealthy. I mean, he bought a 48,000 acre ranch. I mean, you ain't done the math, 48,000 acres. They said they had to build a road to get to this house. It took them, I think it took them 10 years to build the road. His dad was diligent in his business. But if William Hearst had not been diligent, he'd have ended up just like anybody else who was born with money and ended up poor. That's why all of these people who win the lottery, I wish I'd have read the rest of the story. I was reading, it was like 100 different interviews. And a lot, most of them are in America, by the way, that money's ruined their lives. Money didn't ruin their lives, you ruined your life. You weren't diligent. There was one story, there was several of them, people just said, you know, they didn't say the lottery ruined their lives. But this one particular man, he was a business owner. He said, the lottery never ruined my life. It freed me up to live the life I wanted. He in turn went and bought several other businesses, pays his sons to run the businesses, and he travels. They say, Dad is never in America anymore. He's always traveling. That's what he always wanted to do. That was his goal in life when he retired, was to travel. Well, he says, I get to do it now and I'm not all crippled up. But he was one of the few exceptions, and here's why. Because he was already a diligent man. He already understood money. He already understood investments. Whereas most of these people that instantly win the lottery, the first thing they can't do is they can't tell people no. That's what a lot of them said. They said, we had people we didn't even know coming and begging for money. Oh, but Pastor, I just can't tell people no. Well, your husband doesn't say that. No, ladies, your husband did not tell me that. I just threw that in there. I see some of you guys like, oh, man, I'm in trouble now. Pastor doesn't let the cat out of the bag. No. You understand what I'm saying? People who aren't diligent are going to come and ask you for money. They'll still be there. Do you know we still get people asking us for money? You know what I do with the letters? I don't know you. Who are you? You're a ministry, I'm a ministry. Why are you asking me for money? You're sticking your hand in the wrong pocket. Stick it up there. His pockets are deep. Mine have a limit. A very finite limit right now. Although when I stick my hands in his pocket, it's unlimited. But you see, people just can't say no. Why? Because they're not diligent. They're like, whoa, wait a minute. Yeah, I can, well, I'm going to just use Keith as an example, but, you know, if Keith comes to me and says, oh, brother, you know, I hear you, I said, man, I, you know, I'm just about to lose everything I got, and, you know, I only need $20,000. Well, Keith, if I give you the $20,000, what's going to keep you from going out and making the same mistakes? Answering the temporary problem is not the answer. Everybody wants a sudden bailout. Well, we've got to learn something. If you keep spending it wrongly, it's going to keep walking away from you. So if we're more diligent with our money, more diligent with what God has given us, we will rule. But the unfortunate thing is that's why you don't hear of too many godly people who are really wealthy. There are some out there. But you just don't hear of it very often. And the reason being is because they've not, it's never been taught in the church. And you know why? Because we've been taught, and we bought it, hook, line, and sinker, that money is the root of all evil. Haven't we? Money's not the root of all evil. Satan didn't fall because of money. I mean, for crying out loud, he was probably worth $100 million himself just in stones. And I got a feeling the trumpets and the horns that were sticking out of him were probably made out of gold. $1,000 an ounce, you do the math. We want things. We want power. Ultimately, is what we want for. That's what we want money for, is power. You know, now, how many of you, you probably did it too, done the publisher's clearinghouse thing? I do it every time. And periodically, I get a magazine I want, and other than that, I just, nope. Cost me 44 cents. Why? Well, if I win $100 million, you'll understand why. I'm not spending anything. I'm buying a product if I want it. I'm not gambling. I'm not putting my family. All I'm doing is putting a 44-cent stamp on it. But, you know, we've talked about that. Lord, what would we do with $100 million? Well, obviously, we tithe right off the bat. That's the first thing. And I don't, and my tithe is going to go where it's supposed to go. I'm not going to be one of those people who get money and say, well, you know, you can't handle the tithe. I'm your pastor, and you don't. I could handle your $100 tithe, but I can't handle your $1 million tithe. Wow. Yeah, try me. But there was actually a man who said that. Truth of the matter is, he was so morally corrupt that he was mugged. He was mugged by two prostitutes of a strip club. I think they got $100,000 in cash. One took him behind the truck. The other one jumped in the truck, and they left. And then the Joker had the nerve to go to the cops. Now wait a minute, weren't you the one that just went and called all the preachers of your denomination and said, "I'm going to split my tithe up among all of you"? Anyhow, totally different story. But obviously not a diligent man, because I think he's broke now too. What was I talking about before that? Oh, what would I do with it? You know, I always play that. I was like doing it. Man, what would I do with $1 million? What would I do with $100 million? And you got to stop and think about that for a second. You know, I think the last one was like $5 million a week, or no? It worked out to $5 million. Yeah, total, like $5.2 million. What? That's still a lot of money. What would I do with $5.2 million? I said, well, first off, I tithe. Second off, I pave the parking lot. That parking lot is going to get paved. Then, yeah, I'm going to do all kinds of things. One of the things Angela and I talked about, I said, you know what? I think it's high time that godly people take over this community again. And that means in business. I said, I would start this business, I'd start this business, and I'd start this business. And if those that do not want to submit to God can go out of business, I don't care. Because I'm going to hire godly people to run them. We're going to offer the best service, the best product. We're going to raise the bar. You want to know why Morrow County still acts like it's a impoverished county? It's because the people that are running the businesses keep it there. I would turn around. I told Angela, I said, you know what we really want? People don't realize they want it yet. That we want a steakhouse. We want a good steakhouse. I already picked out the building. It would have to be totally converted. But if you've ever been to the Steer Barn in Upper Sandusky, it would be like that. And it would be that quality of steak. I would buy the beef from local producers. Buy the vegetables from local producers. You see what I'm saying? You start bringing things in local. Well, I'm not going to call GFS. I don't know if I have to for some things. But listen, we got fresh vegetables here. Bring them in. We got fresh beef. We're not going to have none of that frozen stuff. We'll call Bob and say, hey, you got any steers that are going to be ready? We'll call people that he would recommend. We'll bless the community. That's diligence, folks. Pastor, why ain't you got $100 million? I don't know. Ask God. You ask God to do it, and maybe I'll hire you. But you see what I'm saying? That's diligence. That's why this community still has a poverty mentality, is we're no longer diligent about blessing and helping, really furthering the community. I'll be honest with you. There's some buildings I just tear down flat out. There are some buildings in this community that need to be tore down because they are below par as far as code-wise. They can't be used. But yet, powerful people own them. You know what? Money talks. The stuff behind the bull walks. You can figure it out. We got to be diligent with what God's given us, not lazy. You know, the parable of the talents, the three servants who were given talents, 10, 5, and 1. The first two invested the talents. The last one, he had one talent to lose. He went and hid it because he was afraid of his master. And his master chewed him out and says, why didn't you at least put it in the bank? I could have at least earned the interest. He chastised that servant because he was not diligent with what he had been given. God gives us things to move on, to help mankind. When we do that, we'll find real joy in everything you do. How many of you want to find joy in what you do? Amen? You got a few hands coming. I do. Everything I do, I want to find joy. I want to be happy that I'm doing it. Not, man, I got to do this again. I'm happy I get to preach. I find joy in this. I don't find joy in having to dig up my driveway. But I did it. Me and my boys. Now I got this big bump. I'll knock it down. Everything's packed now. You know what I just as soon done? I heard somebody who's in the home improvement business. because I know they need to work. I said, hey, come over and dig that up. Put that in there. Fix that for me. Do this. Do that. You know what, man? I want to bless people. There are things we do right now because we have to. There's coming a time. Making one call. Okay, here's the contractor on my list. We need you to build this. Oh, hey, we need... We're taking a team to South America, and we need flights. We need shots. We need this. There's been a disaster in California, and we're taking a team out there to minister and to help. We need flights. We need hotel. We need travel. We need everything. Call the right people. Do it. You want to run the ungodly people out of the power? Let's start being diligent. They've just been diligent with the finances. Bible does say money answers everything. I think it's Ecclesiastes. But it says money answers everything. It does. Poverty? Hunger? You need drinking water? What answers it? Well, we need it. Well, drilling a well help it. Well, yeah, okay, that's fine. Get the truck in here. Well, they won't bring a truck in unless they got $5,000. Money answers the problem of water. War. You got genocide happening over in Africa and other countries and in Europe. You want to answer that problem? Money. I'm just telling you. You want to stop Burma? We don't even know what's happening in Burma. They're killing their own people just for sport. But you know what the church is doing? The church is telling them Jesus loves you and walking away from them. They've got a problem, folks. Jesus said if you tell them, say bless you and you walk away and don't answer their problem, what good have you done for them? That's what we're doing. Well, Pastor, you sound like you're talking about, you know, you need to hire a militia and all this. Why don't you look in your Bible? The people of God stood up and they answered the problems. They didn't leave their friends to be slaughtered. Matter of fact, that's considered shameful. You want to know why America went through what it did with 9/11? Because we bailed on the Kurds. Thousands of Kurdish people were killed in northern Iraq when we left. But we left because our politicians thought we better get out of there while we could. So we turned our back. We told them, we will not let anybody attack you. And they were gassed and they were killed. And we didn't do anything about it until we got hit. When we give our word to people, we got to keep it. Do you want to know why politicians are in power? Do you want to know the number one reason why President Barack Obama is in power? It's not because he's such a good man. As a matter of fact, as far as politics are concerned, people consider him the bottom of the pile. And they're figuring that out now. It was because of money. Money got in there and got him on there. The ads on the television, the press. The press is bought. Come on, they're no different than a two-bit hooker on the corner. Throw them a couple coins and man, they're right there on your story. And I will tell you, that happens here in this county. This paper can be bought. Are we still recording? Stop it.